Oh, that's right. I am right here sitting at Sharp Facets Gallery in my studio right here. And on the line with me today is Adjutant General for South Carolina, Major General Robert Livingston. Major, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Ann. How about you?
I'm doing good. I understand when you were in Greenwood last Sunday, y'all perused right by Sharp Facets going to the Memorial Day ceremony. And Barbara pointed out to you, look, there's where I was.
We did. In fact, I had to drag my wife away from your place. She's when she was up there for an interview before, I think she's inventoried everything you have. So we're looking forward to coming back up at some point.
That's right. That's right. But you guys, she told me you kind of looked at it and said, but that's a jewelry store. And she said, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. she loves the fact that there's a radio station tucked right in there.
Absolutely. Well, it's unique. It is for sure. But, you know, you, of course, were up here. What did you think of our ceremony up here last Sunday?
I tell you what, that was very, very moving, very meaningful, and well attended. Greenwood County is just it's a home of so many great veterans. Of course, it's home of our great B-198 company, communications company, just got back from Afghanistan, but... When I got a chance to talk to all the people at the memorial service, you just saw that huge continuum of service. I mean, people all the way from World War II up until the Days War, and then the community, the young people turning out to recognize our fallen, and you know, all those veterans there remembering their friends that did not come back, and that's what Memorial Day is all about, is that memory. And telling, and you know I like to say this, but telling those stories so that people understand the sacrifices that have to happen to keep our country the way it is, and certainly the greatest country in the world and a great country of opportunity.
Well, it certainly is. It certainly has been. And, you know, that's one of my concerns, General Livingston, is that where are we headed when we look at some of the things that are happening, the Veterans Administration? Are we having those same type of issues in South Carolina? Are you aware of them?
You know, we have some difficulties with our Veterans Administration. Certainly no people are not standing in line long enough to have deaths and things like that. But there are some challenges, and we have... organizations, volunteer organizations throughout South Carolina, like the VFW and the American Legion, and some other ones, to include the National Guard, that we work within the Veterans Administration's bureaucracy to kind of shortcut some of these issues. And the problem with the Veterans Administration, at least from my perspective, is that there is a very bureaucratic front end to that organization, and so many times it almost assumes that someone is trying to commit a fraud, so you're trying to make sure that the person is entitled to the benefits, and then once those once they're entitled, that piece is confirmed, the care, the volunteers, the doctors, the nurses, everybody that's there to care for the veterans, they're very passionate about it, and it's just that bureaucratic front end that is just so frustrating, and we're going to have to nationally do something about that, I hope that this attention that's being placed on the VA works that piece.
Yeah, you brought up a very good point. You know, when we talk about the bureaucratic, I mean, we have that in the Department of Education. We have it in so many parts. In fact, it's just Washington in general.
It really is, and you know, I tell people that the Defense Department that I fight alongside with and part of in Afghanistan and Iraq and you know, Kosovo, wherever our troops have been and wherever I've been, it bears no resemblance to what you see up in Washington, D.C. And it is, there's a lot of a political posturing, a lot of decisions that are made that are not always in the best interest of the country. it's good to see that we do have some heads up there, but that prevail. But it's very, very frustrating. And when you get into these bureaucracies, and as a small business person, it frustrates me because you always see them. They say, if you give me just one more person, I can fix everything. Well, you know, we got 250,000 people in the Department of Defense in Washington, D.C. That hadn't fixed a thing. All it does is just muddle things up. It's we're really going to have to, at some point, figure out how to streamline these things and trust people to do the right thing, put the right people in the positions, and then hold them accountable and responsible.
I think that's the biggest thing. We haven't seen that accountability in this administration.
It's frustrating, but you know, I'm frustrated with things that have happened over the last few years, but even more so is the growing bureaucracy that has occurred throughout my military career. It's just not restricted to Washington. I was in a combatant command for a while, and it was really kind of funny when I left to do overseas duty. We had about 5,000 people in a headquarters. And I came back, and we were just chatting about 6 or 7 months later. And I said, well, you know, how are we doing as far as the size of the headquarters? Because that kind of bothered me when I left. They said, well, you know, we had a hiring freeze. I said, really? Well, how'd that work out? He said, now we've got 7,000 people. So it doesn't always work out the way we think it's going to work out. But it is. It's going to take stripping back the number of people, put more people out, having the effect rather than staffing the effect. And I think we're going to get there because I think the budget's going to eventually drive us there.
Well, I would certainly hope so. I know here in South Carolina, a lot of work has been done by you, Governor Haley, and a concerted effort to help with some of the different things. One of the things that I have talked to you before about and that I would love to have a little more conversation about is the how we are doing on suicide prevention.
That is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. That is actually one of the primary reasons that I offered myself up, and Barbara, my wife, why she offered herself up. Excuse me. excuse me there. Why we offered ourselves up last time, because of the growing suicide concern within the nation. And people don't always identify with suicides in the military. I mean, the military is a relatively small population within the total U.S. population. But when you look at our suicide rates, normally they're running about twice or a little bit more than twice what the civilian suicide rate is. And that translates into, for the National Guard, about 154 suicides last year. A record number, a number that's been growing since about 5 years ago. South Carolina, that number, before I came into office, we were at 3, then the next year was 4, and the year I came into office was 5. And we really instituted a lot of changes within how we treat our troops when they come back, how we maintain stability of commands, the communication processes. And we really clamped it. We did not continue to rise with the rest of the nation. We actually dropped, and we have an average of over the last 4 years of 1.5 per year, which is still way too high.
Sure.
But when you compare it to the rest of the nation, we're just so proud of the efforts of our men and women and the adaptability of our South Carolina soldiers and airmen.
Well, you know, can you explain why suicide became so prevalent in the military? I mean, has it always been there but just unidentified? Or why do you think suicide became such a bigger part of what we were seeing?
Well, you know, I think it has always been there and has not been well identified. But at the same time, it has increased in frequency. Within the National Guard and Reserve specifically, what you see is the effect of an accumulation of mobilizations year after year after year, and that strain on the relationships and also that strain on the individual when they come back from combat and they may have lost, a very close friend. They come back and their family relationship is not what it was when they left, and maybe they do not have that strong faith that's something you can grab onto, and that is it's really ties into that is having something to grab onto that you trust that is a reason to live. Sometimes that they have that momentary peace where they just don't see that reason. You know, their relationships has failed them. They lost a friend in Afghanistan, and they think it may should have been them. And then there's nothing there. And so when we start to try to address this problem, you know, we deal with the family relationships. We deal with the buddy systems, your friends. We deal with your faith. We deal with helping to talk out those issues that are bothering you. And we try to stay away from either self-medication or even medication by a professional unless it's absolutely necessary. Because if medication gets off a little bit, you often end up with a worse problem than you had before. So, so in answer to your question, I think it has been there, but not to the extent that we're seeing now. And what's causing the extent is the repetitive deployments. And, of course, we're going to see those drop off. And what we see is over time, a lot of those memories and wounds heal, but we still know from experience of Vietnam, which was an extended conflict, that those issues are going to continue, 5, 10, and 20 years from now. Maybe not as many people,
sure.
But what we don't want is a bunch of homeless veterans. We don't want a bunch of people that we forget about. We want to make sure that we reintegrate our veterans into society so that they are able to live that long, happy life, and they contribute to our society. They're not a burden on our society.
Well, I think it has to be immensely hard to go off to battle, put your life in harm's way, come home, and maybe family situations have changed slightly just because the mom or the dad had to take over a lot of roles. And then, of course, there's finding a job. If you're in the National Guard, you got to find a job to support yourself.
And that's another place where we have made tremendous progress. We talked about this before, but we actually took our unemployment rate about 4 years ago at 16%, over 16%, and reduced it down below 3.4%. And that has a lot to do with the reduction in suicides, by the way,
sure.
Because if you think about this thing from a soldier's perspective, I've been over fighting the war. And I come back, and I'm having a hard time speaking to other people because they don't have similar experiences. You know, I've been over doing some really tough things, and I have this relationship with my fellow soldier or fellow airman that is just a very, very special relationship. And then I come back into civilian society. I think, people are selfish, and they don't understand the sacrifices being made. And then I can't get a job, and to them, you can send me over and have me killed to save the country, but I'm not good enough to have a job here.
Exactly.
And that process really it was hurting our people. And what we found is that if you educate potential employers, and we've got over 4,500 employers that say they'll give our veterans a first interview. If you educate them and help them understand just how good of an employer or employee these soldiers and airmen and Marines and sailors can be, you put the two together, and it's a great relationship, and the employer benefits, and so does the service member. And in fact, we've been able to expand our program, which is almost an employment service program, to all veterans. Through the governor's program called Operation Palmetto Employment, and it has already placed several hundred veterans in the first couple of months that has been in existence. So South Carolina is making some great strides in reintegrating veterans into society. And I think, of course, you see that. You see so many veterans staying in South Carolina because of our state's attitude.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's terrific, and we should. We definitely should. If you want to ask somebody to put their life on the line when you come back, you definitely should. Just like being able to get medical care, we should help them find that job.
Right. And by the way, they make great employees.
Yeah.
So everybody wins.
You know, if somebody wants more information or would like to know about hiring, hiring, what should they do?
Excuse me.
Go
to
our
website, Operation Palmetto Employment.
Right.
And there's some contacts there. And also, you could go to our National Guard website, and there's employment contacts there, too. So that's probably the easiest way to get back in touch with us.
Okay. One more question. I keep hearing, you know, I know we're talking about the Afghanistan, the troop drawdown is coming, and President Obama just said they're going to be down out of there. I think we're going to leave, 10,000 troops there or something?
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that just bugs the crap out of me is the horror stories that I keep hearing about on base. We're training Afghanis to be able to handle their own country, and yet our soldiers keep getting killed. I mean, I've heard many stories about this, and yet it's not a story that is out there in the public parlance, or they say they're investigating, and you know, once you hear the word investigating, we never hear much more about it.
Yes. Well, you know, there certainly have been some instances. In fact, I had an instance when I was in command over in Afghanistan of a Afghan soldier that actually turned on his fellow Afghans and one of our Air Force mentors, and of course they were killed. And what we found in that investigation is that this soldier, Afghan, had been brought under a tremendous amount of pressure from the Taliban by threatening his family and things like that. And of course, the Afghans are very tribal and very family oriented. And so that was an effective thing. And that happens, unfortunately, in Afghanistan. And, you know, it may happen in any country where you're training the indigenous population. So that is, whereas it happens, it is not, one time is too many.
Exactly.
But you don't see it as maybe as much as you would expect to see it, given the nature of the conflict. And just to help people understand Afghanistan, no matter the underlying piece, is very tribal. And so the village is everything. And then you put that religious piece on top of it, the Muslim religion. And then you put another piece on top of that, which has been the occupation by so many countries, the latest one being the Soviets, and then the militarization of the anti-Soviet, which turned into anti-Western people. And that is that's within the population. Many of the soldiers that we trained were part of the Mujahideen that fought against the Soviets. Well, at the same time, the Taliban came out of the Mujahideen and out of Al-Qaeda, too. But, you know, they all have a common core. And so when you go into a village, they are always looking to see, okay, are you offering me a better future for 10 years from now? Or is somebody else offering me a better future for 10 years from now? Because this country has been conquered and occupied, you know, all the way back to Alexander the Great. So the mindset of survival is very, very strong. And so it's not when the United States comes in and says, we're here to give you freedom and to give you opportunity, they kind of go, yeah, we heard that 3,000 years ago. So, you know, they take us, although they want us there, they want something better for the children. You know, 70% still favor us. But there's still people there that don't like us. And that's very hard to weed out to get it down to zero. I mean, we, you know, unfortunately, we've had people within our own country down at Fort Hood kill our soldiers. So
it just seems
if it happens here, over there, it's going to happen too. And that's just it's a terrible thing, but it's something that we just have to continue to screen the population, and minimize it.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry to bring that topic up, but that's just one that really bothers me.
It bothers me, and like I said, I lost a great airman over that, and it bothers me to the day. And you know, quite frankly, and again, that person also killed Afghans, and we actually intervened to keep them from beating this guy to death, and fortunately we did because we gained a lot of intelligence from him afterwards.
Wow.
But it's not I'm killing Americans. I'm trying to kill ideas of freedom, and Afghans suffer as much as the Americans do. In fact, it is maybe more so sometimes.
Wow. Well, to end on a little higher note here, not only does the National Guard go overseas, but you are our first line of defense in an emergency right here in our own state. And what, next week is 25 years since you go?
It has been. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
And I remember Hugo like yesterday. It was a very tough time for South Carolina, but it was also South Carolina at its finest. I was down on the coast. They gave me Folly Beach, Sullivan's Island, Isle of Palms, Allendale, and McClellanville. And I don't know if I had really made somebody mad that day or they had a lot of confidence in me, but one of the two things happened. But what we saw along that coastline where the storm actually came ashore and caused so much damage is such strong willpower, resilience, and South Carolinians came together and recovered. And you saw that economic boom 2 years later, and the coast is so strong now. And, of course, our building codes are better than they were, but that thread is still there, and we are – the governor put out a proclamation of next week is Hurricane Awareness Week. We're actually going to be conducting a on-the-ground exercise in Georgetown. Our Air Guard is actually going to be heavily involved in that. Is that we'll be opening airstrips that will be simulated closed by the hurricane, and bringing in air traffic controllers and being able to bring supplies in order to support the efforts into a storm very similar to Hugo. And we just finished a really big exercise back in the fall, Arctic Century, where it was a multi-state exercise dealing with a hurricane and a nuclear contamination. And all of this is down at the county level, at the city level, the emergency worker being involved, with the state supporting it, that's how we recover in South Carolina. I mean, that's how we recover in the United States. It is that local community that knows what it needs that helps guide all these great state resources that come flowing, and eventually the federal resources. So we want to exercise it at every level, but especially at that local level, so that we're able to respond immediately for the citizens of South Carolina.
Absolutely. Well, Adjutant General Robert Livingston, it is always a pleasure to have you on. I'm glad you could take some time and tell us what's going on and what's been going on. I appreciate your honesty here this morning.
Well, thank you, Ann. And, you know, I'd like to give a shout-out to all of our emergency workers, all of our National Guard members, all of our families, because they truly show what service is all about, and we're just so proud of them. And thank you for highlighting that, and thanks to the great community of Greenwood that how you care for the people that care for the people of South Carolina.
Well, thank you very much. Listen, you have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll see you. Goodbye.
All right.